Did you know that I was actually in a special class in middle school? And it was, so each year group had one special class. It was always the last. So in Germany, classes are named based on the alphabet. So you have class 5A, 5B, 5C, and so on and so forth. The special class was always the last one of the year group. And the special class meant it was like a band class. So we were doing music and we had access to, you know, different instruments and all that kind of stuff. And we were given instruments by the school, which we could take home and set up at home. And yeah, then we had weekly band practice sessions and we formed our own cool bands and we gave them cool names. I remember the name of my first band was, I think it was No Name, because we thought we were tricking the system. You know, the teachers told us, pick a name for your band. And we were like, no, we're cool. We're not going to pick a name. So we're going to trick your system and this exercise to pick a band name. And we're just going to call it No Name because we're really cool. And then, yeah, we had our band and we played the same songs every year, basically. It was a mess. But yeah, we were still the special class. And yeah, that felt good.
Yeah, this story come up because he said 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, that's why it came up. Because I remember, you know, at the beginning, so we didn't have, I think it sort of developed over the years. And in the later years, we did have fixed people for fixed instruments and fixed roles. But usually at the beginning, everybody was assigned to an instrument and everyone was learning a specific instrument. So the role of the singer, that wasn't a specified or like a single role. That was something that each of us would do occasionally. So we each played our instruments, but then when we were performing songs, we just randomly picked someone of the band to do the singing, right? So everyone was singing. I was also singing, and I just I was also rapping, right? There were some of these songs which had rap parts in it, and yeah, I loved those parts. I was feeling myself, you know. It was hilarious. But yeah, and I remember like the first couple of years, you know, us 10, 11 year olds, you know, standing there with a mic. And we had this one guy in my class and he, whenever he was singing, he wobbled like this because he didn't know what to do. So yeah, we called him Penguin because he looked like a penguin because he kept going like from one leg to another. Yeah, it was a fun time.
That is fun.
So much about myself, you know? Yeah. Do you have any childhood stories on the same level of interestingness, if that's a word?
Probably no. Yours is too interesting to
it's hard match. To beat, I admit. Yeah.
Yeah. What instrument did you play? Because I remember you played something. Yes.
Yeah, so I played the drums.
Oh, yes, and yes.
Yes. And I started that before I went to middle school, so I was already playing the drums. And funny enough, actually, not at the beginning, but at some point, my drum teacher, who at this point had already been my teacher for, I don't know, like 4 years or something, and who stayed my teacher up until, well, basically when I turned 18 and left for Munich, right? So actually not too long ago, right? I had the same teacher for 11 years, basically, or like 12 years or something. And at some point, you also joined the school. So actually, he was also teaching us in school. So yeah, I was the same teacher. But I played the drums, yeah. So as you can imagine, I was one of the really cool kids, you know, singing, rapping, playing the drums.
Yeah, with your super cool band name.
Yeah, with my no-name band, you know, backing me up. Yeah.
Yeah,
we actually won like one of those contests. I believe we won like some contest in like seventh grade or something.
Well, you should be good proud times. Of yourself.
Yes.
Oh my god, this reminds me. So, do you know this interviewer? Her name is Bobby, I think. She does this really awkward interviews to famous singers or famous people. She did one with Drake, and it's just she's really awkward. But like she tries to make it awkward. She's always answering like very like yeah, so why do you do this? She's like very mean and not she doesn't try to make the conversation flow. But that's the cool thing about it, because it's kind of a challenge for the people she brings to keep up the conversation and to look good in the conversation without her trying to make the other person look good. So I don't know, I don't know why this reminded me of it, because it has no relation, but it just reminded me of it. And they're so fun, you should watch one. It's just really, because obviously that's not her real self. So it's funny when you see her breaking character sometimes, with like not on purpose. So yeah, you should watch some of them. They're like, they don't have any value or anything. They're just fun to watch. So,
yeah. I mean, I don't know how you drew the connection from my super engaging story about my childhood to that topic, but anyway, apart from that, there's multiple people who have adopted this awkward interview style recently. But I'm not quite sure if I know Bobby. I think, is she, so she's female, right? Or yeah. Is she?
I think,
or,
that's her name. Okay, yeah. It might not be. I think so.
Okay, I think I actually know who you're talking about. There's also this other girl from the UK, I believe, who's doing these interviews in the chicken shops. Do you know her? I don't remember the name, but she's also become... Yeah, so she goes into these like random chicken shops across the UK, like these random shops where you buy like chicken wings and fries, and she sits down with like really big people. Like, she has interviews with Ed Sheeran and all kinds of like other musicians and artists, but also like different people. But she's also famous for exactly this type of, or this style of conversation, where she's making it really awkward, and it's supposed to be incredibly awkward. But yeah, it's interesting. Like, you would imagine that nowadays everything has been done, but people keep coming up with like new ideas of how to do things that have been done for like centuries in like some kind of new unique way that is interesting and different and engaging. Yeah, I don't know. Shall we try out a podcast episode where we're not even communicating, we're just sitting here and just like, you know, moving our heads and seeing if it's like more engaging?
Oh my god, that'd be horrible, to be honest. That's like, I don't know, imagine trying to make that's not what it's called. Small talk, yeah. Trying to do like small talk with someone who's not trying to put the same effort. So that's basically those interviews, I guess. I could not do that. I'd put on my headphones and then just ignore the conversation. That's what I do with the bus sometimes. When I see people that I know and that I've talked to before, obviously, and they sit beside me on the bus when I go to uni, but they're not my actual friends. So there's like this period of 3 minutes where we talk, and then suddenly, like, there's no cue for the conversation ending. It just ends, and like, I put my head on, anyway, and it just ends, and it's so awkward, and we're just ignoring each other. But that, okay. Like, I hate that. I would prefer to do that than to have an awkward conversation for like a long period of time.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, to be fair, I find it surprising and sort of scary how, well, I often get this feeling, even, you know, with my friends, you know, everyone's incredibly busy, and the people around me, they're like doing a ton of things, right? Whether it's, you know, just studying or studying and doing some other thing, but everyone's busy. But I still find it amazing how it keeps coming up, the situation where nobody feels like they have anything to say or talk to or talk about, right? I don't know. It's just so strange. You know, people are doing things, but for some reason, the material or the content for conversation runs out pretty quickly.
Yeah, but because there's things you don't say to certain people. They don't ask you, how are you? And you don't start saying, well, yesterday I recorded a podcast about this. And that's just, that's not small talk material. So I guess you could say, well, I've been studying, but you're not going to say, yesterday I studied for 5 hours and it was exhausting, so I went early. Like, that's just that's things you tell your friends when you're having a conversation, but it's not small talk material, I think. And it's just hard to say that to someone, especially when you don't know them that well and you don't know what they're going to say back, because they could be interested in it or completely like ignore you and think you're weird. And so, yeah, I don't know. Not easy.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think it's easier to just stay on the, you know, small talk level, because again, you risk less. If you do open up and say more, like if you get specific about the things that have happened recently in your life, or the things that are like the specific things that are currently going through your mind, or things you're thinking about, and you're sort of making yourself vulnerable to, for example, the other person simply like not caring about it at all and not engaging with it, and then you just look stupid, right? You just spend like 10 sentences talking about something that's happened or something that you actually care about or something that's been going on. And then the other person's like, yeah, okay, what are you going to do on the weekend? So I guess, yeah, it's safer to sort of stay on the small talk level.
Yeah. And it's not just that it's safe when you're avoiding risk. I just feel like there's no real point to it, because those things I believe that are interesting to me, I wouldn't want to talk about them with someone who wouldn't. So if I don't know them, and if I don't want to have, but I wouldn't see small talk, I don't think it's a conversation where you get something valuable out of it. It's just for the sake of being social, I guess. And when I tell things about myself that I consider interesting or important to myself, I do that to get some value out of it. Not as in a way that you give me something, I give you something, but is a good conversation. And I don't think I would get any value by telling that to someone, especially if it's like a 50-minute like exchange. I don't know, I wouldn't want to, not only because they think I'd be weird or something. That's like the least of like my concerns from that. It's just that I wouldn't feel comfortable sharing that with another person, because I wouldn't want them to know, you know, like you are a person that is, I don't know if you get what I mean. I wouldn't want to share that, I guess.
Yeah, I think I get what you mean, but yeah, I don't know. I wonder why we don't want to have, you know, deeper conversations with people. I don't know why we want to, yeah, you know, even if it's 15 minutes, I think 15 minutes is quite a long time, right? If you're on a bus ride and you have 15 minutes to talk, approximately, why would you want to stay on the superficial level and just talk about, I don't know, I get so bored in these conversations. And again, I'm not trying to, you know, portray myself as this high-tea, I don't know if that's a word, but I think you know what I mean. I'm not trying to present myself as this wise man who's sitting down with his you know, philosopher friends, and you know, who starts the conversation with the question, what is the meaning of life, right? I'm not talking about that, but I do wonder why people don't have an inherent interest, even just for the personal benefit, to skip that superficial stuff or to go to some actually interesting topic. I don't know, is it satisfying to people to just talk about the plans for the weekend?
No, but to be like, I do think some people don't. Okay, I'm not gonna say some people don't have interesting thoughts, because everyone has interesting thoughts, I guess. It's just maybe people share it less. But I don't know, it's just, yeah, I guess you're right. And also it would be an opportunity to maybe get to know a person that's not really your friend, that's not someone you typically exchange those types of things. If you do that, then you could build a deeper connection with that person, which it is true, but I typically don't want to do that, because I typically kind of choose who I want to have a deeper connection with and who I don't. And normally, if it's someone on the bus, I normally meet, like, I just wouldn't. But you're like, I guess you're right. I think it is an opportunity, and I don't know why people wouldn't want to. But at the same time, I think it's just what people are used to. Like, normally people just don't bring up a deep conversation. But yeah, the question is not, why don't they do it? If not, it's like, why shouldn't we start doing it? Sorry, that was,
clear. No, I think it's actually pretty clear. And it's just, I don't know, of course, again, there's like the, it's just an observation, right? And I don't know. Yeah, I don't, it just confuses me because I feel like when people first start interacting properly, and I'm not talking about you see some totally random person on the bus and you have like this 1 second of eye contact. I'm not talking about that. But when you first meet someone and you have a conversation, let's say you have your friends at uni and they bring in a new person, right? Or one of your friends introduces you to their friend group and you sit on the table or like for the first time for lunch or something. Then there's this initial phase, which is about exchange of maybe not super deep information, but there is sort of, there's enough energy in that starting phase of the forming of a relationship where you do have conversations about some, somewhat more meaningful information, right? Your origin, your interests, your hobbies or things like that. So it's definitely a sort of a ground for more interesting conversations. But then it just amazes me how quickly you move past that interaction, that first phase where it's really about asking questions and finding things out about the other person, and how quickly we arrive at the point where we're just, you know, standing next to each other in life and doing our own individual thing, but not going into this deeper exchange anymore. Because I feel like, I don't know, first of all, there's this one quote or this general, I guess, proverb or something that you can probably always learn something from the people around it, or that there's probably at least one thing that a person that you interact with could teach you, right? And something that would actually be valuable for you. But also, I feel like I'm pretty sure that pretty much everyone I interact with at least has one more story, interesting story, that would be fun to listen to that I haven't heard about yet, right? But for some reason, I mean, I'm also pretty sure that I like a ton of really fun and like cool and like just fun and interesting stories about you, like about your past, for example, right? I just told this story about, you know, me during middle school. I'm sure there's like a ton of stories like that about your life and about your growing up. And maybe there's like some darker stories, which are also interesting. But for some reason, I mean, we have this setup where we literally sit down on a weekly basis to skip that superficial stuff and to talk about things that actually interest us and that actually mean something to us. But with pretty much every other relationship, if you don't have that mentality within the relationship to go to those topics, then it's just, I don't know, you skip that and you share so much of your time with close friends, but you really like you're missing out on a lot they have to say or a lot of their thoughts. And it's just weird to me. It just confuses me.
Yeah.
And again, this is like no solution or anything, but it's just an observation that, I don't know, is weird.
Yeah, you're completely right. I was like listening to what you were saying and I was like, yeah. To be honest, okay, so to clarify, the bus situation, the bus is not a place where I'm social. So I guess that could like explain it. Okay, so the bus is me time where I relax, I think, I look through the window. So, okay. Now let's move from there. So what you said to a social interaction where you meet you like a new friend is introduced into the group, a new person. Yeah, you're completely right. Sometimes I even think about this is I do have so many things that I'd love to share, and oh my god, we have at least for us, we have every week we spend 1 hour talking about something like interesting. That probably came from something we did during the week or something we thought about. So if that comes like once a week, I'm sure you have so many things that can come like in the social reunion that you have like once a month with new people. I mean, I go out, I see my friends more than once a month. But yeah, you're totally right. But there's nothing, I don't know, I guess it starts from you. Like giving the first step into that conversation and like taking the risk of the other person following you into a more interesting conversation or not. But yeah, I guess that's the only way to kind of change that dynamic. And I do think that's how like friendships are actually born. It's not just, well, obviously like spending time together that forces you to become friends, but also people do become friends from like a simple like a one day interaction. So, yeah, I don't know. Now I don't know, because also it happens when I'm with my friends that are actually my friends. These conversations that we have, for example, I don't have with them. Like sometimes we have these really interesting conversations, but most of the time they're just silly things we tell each other and we just like do. And it comes to question, like, this is so much more valuable for the friendship in general, because I get to know you better and the other person gets to know me better. But also it's valuable for an individual. Like these conversations bring so many insights to what I've thought during the week and to my own things that I tell you. So I don't know why. I don't know, this made me like question all my relationships and the way, like, when I see my friends, it's kind of sad in the way that this is not the typical thing. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to add. I mean, I agree, but I also agree on the conclusion that I think it's just sad. Yeah.
Perfect. Okay, let's
end the
call.
Atmosphere just crashed. There's no returning. Yeah. No. Okay. Let's. Well. Okay. Let's have a shared conclusion that it's sad that, you know, in general there seems to be, again, there just seems to be. I mean, we don't know for certain. Maybe all these people have these amazing deep relationships, and we're just the one missing out on all of the fun. No, but it just seems to be like relationships are becoming increasingly shallow. And to me, I just had this image in my head about how to visualize it. Because you know I'm a visualizer. Right, when you have these, and I think you explained it, it's something you said, which sort of brought that image into my mind. When you share things about each other and things that actually mean something to you, right? So they're valuable to you. And by sharing that, you sort of expose something of you that actually is part of you and that is a significant part of you. So again, there's this aspect of vulnerability. But by sharing that and by exchanging that and doing so vice versa, so like from one side to the other, but also having the other person reciprocate. Is that the word? I think so. Yeah.
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 I don't know the actual like pronunciation.
I think it is the word. Let's just pretend. Yeah, okay, let's just move on. So sharing these stories and these deep thoughts in both directions, it creates a certain, I don't want to use the word stickiness, right? But it's sort of in a way like it connects the two people in some kind of sense. Right.
Yeah.
It's I'm picturing it like ropes that are, you know, connecting you two, and by each additional story you share, but each you know, deep conversation you have, you sort of connect an additional rope, right? And it's becoming an increasing number of ropes that connect you, and so the bond essentially just gets stronger, right? But if you stay on that superficial level and the relationship basically just upholds itself through the quantity of interaction, not the quality of interaction, but just, for example, you know, spending every day at uni together, sitting there, not talking really, but, you know, sharing the time, and that's the primary thing that holds the relationship together. But you, like, in terms of conversation and actual exchange of information, you stay in that superficial level. It's essentially like a very weak bond between, you know, the two individuals. And it's almost like, what's the word of it? Oh my God. So on like jackets, you have these, and it's like these two different materials. No, not a zipper, but these two different materials. Yeah, Velcro. Yeah, and it's like a Velcro strap, right? There is a connection, certainly, and it, you know, it it is strong enough to stay alive if you keep interacting, you know, if you keep up the quantity. But once the quantity is gone, it's very easy to rip it apart and it doesn't hurt or anything. And it's, you just move on, right? You go to a new city and the friendship just, you know, falls apart essentially, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. But again, I don't think it really has anything to do with, you know, necessarily. I don't think it's anything about, you know, you should have deep relationships. I think it's just like for your own personal benefit, wouldn't you want to have deep relationships? Because wouldn't you want to hear interesting stories instead of just what the other person had for lunch yesterday? Wouldn't you want to be able to share your actual thoughts and the things that are actually on your mind and process them with someone else in the conversation?
Yeah.
So...
yeah, that is true, but at the same time, I guess that can be a bit overwhelming to have all of your relationships, I guess, to be so deep. And because that means you're constantly thinking. Sometimes, I guess, you just want to, like, disconnect from your actual, like, not reality, but maybe from what you've been thinking or what you've been talking about with other people. Sometimes I think that's why it happens. Like sometimes you're just with friends to disconnect and not to connect. So that's the difference. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it also that's
well,
why
that's
you have
getting
different
me to
friends.
Think.
Yeah. So. You have different friends.
That's an interesting sentence. Sometimes you want to be with friends to disconnect instead of connecting. Can you explain like more specifically what you mean by that? But I think it's like a really interesting thought.
So I'd say, so sometimes you've had a really, let's put it into an example, you've had a really busy week of studying, of maybe you've had this problem in your head and you've thought through it a lot. And you've reached a point where you're kind of exhausted of that, and it's the weekend, and you just want to meet up with friends to get out from that situation where you're at home, think about the same thing over and over again. For example, you just want to go and not forget, because you're not forgetting about your life, obviously, when you go out. But you kind of distract yourself from maybe what's going on, and it doesn't have to be in a bad way of like avoiding problems, but it's a way of maybe unwinding and maybe forgetting of all the things, like the things you have to do and things like that. So obviously when you're with friends trying to relax from that, you're not gonna bring that up to. And those might be the things that are going on in your life that would make you connect, but you don't want to connect. You want to disconnect from that, in a way. That's what I'd say. But at the same time, I think that's a kind of a specific situation. I think there's just times where, so for me, I have different friend groups, and there's a clear friend group. Like in my head, I know the purpose of this group, and that group is normally to disconnect. When I'm feeling overwhelmed, I normally go out with them, and that just happens because I feel like I want to do that. And then there's this other group which you have deeper conversations, and that's normally when everything is going okay. I don't feel the need to to disconnect. That's when I normally see that friend group more often, and I do connect in a way. So for you, like, I feel like we're connecting in these conversations. I wouldn't feel like I wouldn't have these conversations to disconnect, because where these conversations are about life and about reality and about the things that are going on. So I don't know. I think that's a way to put it. I know.
Yeah, I think it's super interesting. I think you explained it pretty well. I sometimes wonder if, I mean, the way you described it for your own personal life is that you have different types of friend groups, right, for these different purposes. So if you want to like simplify it, one for like disconnecting, one for connecting, right? And might be, you know, different people in those different groups, right? But I wonder if, yeah, I wonder if, you know, for the majority of people, and again, I don't know, I'm not a scientist, I haven't done the survey or something, but I wonder if it's, you know, for the majority of people, if they actually have these different types of friend groups, or if some people also just maybe just have this one type of friend group, which is purely for disconnecting, right?
Yeah.
I mean, since we started this podcast, right? I mean, just a very quick background. So we started this podcast because we were doing the blog before that, and then we, you know, made the cut and switched to the podcast format. I have actually really been wanting to write blog posts again because I don't know. I really like the process of like really taking an idea and breaking it apart and putting it into words and clarifying, you know, each individual part of it. And there was actually one blog post I started, which is, I'm not quite sure what I put as the title, but I think I put something like a case for strategic socializing or something. Because, yeah, I mean, the way you described it, and it makes sense, right? And I get that, like, some friends you might want to have specifically for disconnecting, right? And you want to sort of use them, not necessarily in a bad way. It could go both ways, right? But you just want to engage with that group of friends to be able to disconnect from the things that are challenging you in life. And I think, I mean, we briefly sort of talked about it in the last podcast episode, how for some reason we as humans, we have this need to disconnect, right? And I think last episode we called it unconsciousness, or, well, essentially like making yourself numb in some kind of sense, right? Going away from reality. And I think I also mentioned the Matrix choice of pills, right? I either choose the blue or the red one. I'm not quite sure. I believe the blue one was the one for accepting reality and the red one was the one for escaping. I might be wrong. Might be the other way around. But yeah, for some reason, we as humans have this need to disconnect from reality. And I guess it also goes for friends, right? You might want to use your friends to be able to escape your reality.
Yeah,
there was no specific thought in that, but it's just, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a clarification. And I do think that if people only have the disconnect friend group, I do feel like, well, at least for me, if I only had that friend group, I'd feel kind of empty in a way. Not empty myself, but alone. Yeah, more alone, because that's what friends, I mean, those people are my friends, but it's just not the same way. It's not the same thing. And I do feel like us as humans, we need to connect with people and we do need to share thoughts. So even if we need to disconnect, we also need to connect. So I feel like people who feel alone when having friends, that's probably the reason why. Well, it doesn't have to be. Obviously, people can be like bad friends and I don't know, not make you feel good with it. But I do think that could be a problem, like only having friends to disconnect. That's only a problem.
Yeah, so like only having friendships where there's a lack of depth essentially to the friendship.
Yeah.
And a depth to the level of exchange. Or I guess where there's just a lack of meaning, really. Where it's just so superficial and it's purely about numbing yourself and about escaping reality. And if it's the case for everyone, that everyone's just trying to escape reality, then it's sort of just this group of desperation trying to get away. And, you know, I mean, maybe there's something to bond in that, right? If it's, you know, but then again... Once you had that situation, it would be about meaning again, right? Trying to help each other escape the burdens of life.
Yeah, but it sounds like really depressing. And I don't see it as depressing. And I, to be honest, like for me, that group is escaping. But I don't think that for everyone in that group, that's how they feel. It's just me personally. And I do think I'm quite different from them in mindset or things that I do. So I guess that could be. I don't know. I mean, just the way you put it sounded really sad and depressing, but I don't think for them, I think they're fine with each other, and I don't know. It's just for me, I need more from that, from what I get from that group. But it's not the case for most of the people there. And I don't know. I feel like because the friend group I said that I connect with, I had them before. I had that friend group before I was in, like with this new friend group, because that happened when I changed schools. So I don't know. I guess like I didn't really put in the effort, or because I didn't feel the need to form deep connections with the people in that group. I was just fine, like seeing them, going out with them, having fun, and just like having normal conversations, because I already had my other friend group with whom I connected. But for them, most of the people that is their only group, or not their only group, but their main friends. Whereas for me, my other group is my main friends, are my main friends. So, but like, that's what I'm saying. It doesn't have to be sad, but it is sad if the whole group obviously is in a superficial level and doesn't have any other like connection or support from other people. But if both parties are fine with what it is, then it doesn't have to be sad, as long as you feel fine, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, and of course it's just a, of course, obviously it's a personal choice what kind of friends you have, right? Again, I'm really not trying. I know like this is very easy to fall into this trap of sounding like you're telling people what to do. You're telling people you should have super deep conversations with your friends or whatever. Or I don't know, like this is, you know, a quality relationship and this is a low quality relationship or whatever. But for me, I mean, maybe it's also just like something that's been on my mind, right? Which sort of connects me, or which maybe explains my position on this, why I think it's so sad that why I think it's sad when relationships lack depth or lack meaning, just because I've been especially, you know, thinking about the difference between meaning and happiness and how that relates to basically all aspects of life, right? Because I feel like, again, I'm pretty sure, and I'm like, I'm happy for everyone who has friends who help them in some kind of way, and if the help manifests itself in the form of just like shared happiness or enjoyment, right? I'm sort of picturing like the friends who worked all day long, right? And now they meet up after work and they have a beer together or something at a local pub or something. Again, I'm not trying to downgrade anything. I think that's much better than sitting alone by yourself and watching some show or like drinking beer by yourself, right? So in general, I'm all for relationships of any sort, right? Well, of the sort where there's some kind of benefit in whatever form. But I think there's a distinct meaning between relationships that bring happiness and relationships that are built around meaning in some kind of way. So I think, you know, relationships that are based on happiness are the ones, sort of like the fun relationships and the relationships that are probably most attractive from the outside, because they're, I would categorize them or characterize them as the type of relationships that are, you know, lower maintenance, right? But still are fairly high, and also a fairly high instant return, right? The type of friend you can just call up and be like, hey, let's go out, let's have a fun night. It's fairly low maintenance, right? It's also attractive for the other person. You don't really have to convince the other person because you're offering a very attractive package, right? In this case, in this specific example, for example, you offer a fun night out, right? And that's attractive for the other person. So it's also low energy. It doesn't take much energy for the other person to accept that type of relationship or that type of engagement, right? And so you just have this very easy package, this very easy relationship. you meet up, you have a fun night together, you have fun, you're happy in the moment instantly, you get it directly, the return. And so everyone's happy. Next day, you're happy, you had a good night together, and you might be able to, you know, continue that type of relationship, and it might continue to be able to feed you with happiness, right? Because it becomes like your buddy to go out with, or it becomes like the person you can, I don't know, just relax with, right? And that would be this example of a relationship based on happiness. And again, I'm not saying there's no value in that. I mean, there's clearly value in that, and it's clearly, you know, direct value, so it's pretty good from that perspective. But then the opposing relationship, the relationship based on meaning, I mean, it's obviously less attractive, you know, from an outsider perspective. It's a relationship that you probably need to build more because it's, you know, based not on some, you know, last minute or like short-term experience, like a shared party or something, but it's built on actual exchange about, you know, information and parts of your identity, right? Talking about things that mean something to you, talking about things, you know, that might have been difficult for you. It doesn't always have to be super dark or anything, but it's just you exchange something that takes effort and that takes courage to exchange, and it also makes you vulnerable. But I feel like these relationships are just much more sustainable, right? Once you're able to build them, I think it's just the type of relationship that gives you much more stability than these relationships based on happiness, because they're not based on a perfect world, which is, you know, you might be able to uphold for a certain period of time, like a perfect world, but, you know, things will get tough eventually. I'm also just thinking, you know, like exam phase, right? Last minutes before the exam, you know, nobody's able to go to a party or something. So in those moments or in those times where things are difficult, where everyone has to buckle down and really focus on the things they're doing, then those relationships based on happiness just fall apart much more quickly. But a relationship based on meaning can, you know, sustain and supply you with support and energy even in those more difficult times, right? So I think from that perspective and from my personal perspective, that's the relationship that I'm more concentrated on, or that I see more long-term value in. But I guess, I mean, again, it's just, you know, essentially a trade-off between, you know, the simpler short-term version, the potentially a bit harder long-term version. I hope that makes some level of sense, you know, the distinction between those two.
Yeah, it makes complete sense. And I do agree with, I mean, you didn't really say anything specific to agree with, but I do think, me personally, I also look more for that value and that not value, that meaning in relationships. But yeah, I mean, I don't want to get into the loop of it again, but as I was saying, it does get kind of overwhelming when you have a certain amount of, not high maintenance, because it doesn't necessarily have to be high maintenance when there's meaning to it, but they're definitely not low maintenance. No, low maintenance. So yeah, and you're not gonna stop meeting people and getting to know people just because you have enough good friends, I guess. But yeah, there comes a point where I don't feel like asking more questions or letting more people know about like my life plans or stuff like that, because I already have people that listen to me in that way, or that tell me their own things, that it's just, for me, is enough. And it's tiring, not tiring because it shouldn't be if it's meaningful, but it's just too much, I guess. So for example, now that I started university, I started meeting new people. And not all of those people, like, I could not have meaningful relationships with all of those people, obviously, even if they could potentially be really good friends and really interesting people. It's just because I don't have like the will to do that. And because I also like spending time with myself and stuff like that, obviously that takes effort. And that's where low maintenance friends become like easy. And yeah, I don't know. And it doesn't have to be where you're saying like super happy. And you can't have like certain meaningful conversations with those people who are not really meaningful to you, kind of. But it's just you play a different role in those kind of friendships. And for me, I need those friendships as well as I need the other ones. So yeah. But I do feel better, or I do think the ones that are meaningful, I do think those ones are more important. But I do think that it's important to also like not have the need to have meaning with everyone and have deep conversations with everyone, even like you should have. Well, yeah, you got what I meant.
No, I got what you meant, and I think it's such an important point, because basically if I'm to paraphrase or summarize what you just said, there's just a logistical constraint on the amount of deep relationships you can have. I mean, imagine you had just 7 really deep friendships, and with all of them you were doing a podcast. That would be a 1.5 hour conversation every day. That's a big part of your, I mean, of course, like other parts of your life will still be bigger, but that's a pretty significant percentage of your awake time every week, right? And so there's a logistical and like a practical constraint. And I'm also like talking about constraints now because I have an operations research and decision analysis exam coming up next Tuesday, which is precisely about, you know, if you want to produce certain goods or whatever, you have a certain constraint on resources, for example. So you can't just produce endless amounts of products, right? But you have certain constraints, or like you have a constraint on demand because you don't want to overproduce or whatever. But yeah, just to like draw the connection, that's just, you can't have these super deep conversations with everyone around you, right? You probably interact with more than 100 people every week, right? Maybe even significantly more, maybe a bit less, I don't know. But you interact with a lot of people, and there's no way you can sit down with everyone and be like, hey, how are you doing? Like, seriously, how are you doing? There's no way you're going to be able to maintain all of that. It'd be a full-time job, right? And I think that's a really important, and that's sort of what I mean by socializing strategically. At a certain point, if you want to build a social life that provides you with everything you need, and that hopefully also provides the other, you know, members of that social environment with everything they need, right? Then you have to be somewhat strategic about it if you want to make that the perfect system, right? Or like something approaching a perfect social system. Because there's a certain reality, which is 24 hours a day. There's capacity limits. There's also, I mean, you talked about like energy, right? You might just lack the energy to go into the depth with everyone, right? And so, you know, you have to be strategic about the limited number of people or the limited number of seats you have, which you intentionally fill with people that you want to have in your life. And then you have these, I mean, I think it's totally fine to sort of diversify your social portfolio, right? You have these deep relationships, you have family relationships, you have these lower maintenance, these, you know, friendships, which might just be based on, you know, shared events together, you know, going out like on the weekend or something, which again is totally fine, right? And then you have some relationships which are even more low maintenance, right? So that could be like acquaintances or like people you've just seen, like you wave at them, like when you pass by them in the corridor or something. Yeah. But that's sort of, yeah, that's my perspective, that at a certain point, like if the goal is to optimize your social life, which again, yeah, I'm sure a lot of people won't think about it that way, right? I think there's value in trying to optimize it, because I think, you know, your social life plays a significant role in the experience of your life, and whether you experience your life as something that's enjoyable and worthwhile, or whether you experience it as something that's meaningless, right? So I think there's value in trying to optimize the social life. And if that is your goal, if you do take that on as your goal, then you have to take into, it's a linear program. For those people who are familiar with that, again, decision analysis, you have a objective function, which is the thing you're trying to maximize, which in our case would be maximizing your social life or the output of your social life. And then you have certain constraints, and that could be your time, that could be your resources, capacities. And you have to live with them. You can't just ignore them, right? But yeah. Yeah, I think that's basically everything, right?
You have to write the blog posts. Just do it. If you're missing it, then do it. I was thinking about the blog the other day, and I was thinking how much I don't miss. I don't miss writing. I prefer this format a lot more. I do feel like my ideas come out much easier. Oh my god!
Yeah.
What happened there? Much easier. And when writing a blog post, it was hard. So it was harder because it did become easier. But I like this format. But if you want to write a blog post, then write a blog post. And if it's about having strategic socializing, then please write it, because I want to read it.
Yeah, I mean, we basically like covered most of the aspects today. Yeah, but I think it's really fun, like exploring ideas in a conversational setting. So thanks a lot.
We'll see.
I think the blog is definitely gonna start up at some point again.
Yeah,
I'm gonna find a way to force you to write blog posts. Okay, no, I'm just kidding.
No, maybe in summer I have ideas and they'll just like load around. But
yes, yeah, it'll be cool. I mean,
way of saying it.
Yeah, no, but I mean, it's really cool. Like in summer, we'll be meeting in person again, since, well, for the first time since 2-3 years or something.
So no, it'll be 2 years. I think
2 years. Okay, 2 years.
Yeah.
Time's passing quickly. It's so weird.
Yeah, it is. Also, but, we should have Inigo as like a guest interviewer.
Yes. Interviewee is the person who is being interviewed. Or should we interview him?
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Okay,
then it's interviewee. But like have a conversation with him. Because we should do like two different ones. One like each other, like this, but
yes.
But in person, and then we should have one with Inigo.
Yeah. So just as a background, Inigo is Inigo is our good friend from boarding school. So he was my roommate actually when we went to boarding school. And he's also from Spain, and you got in touch because you're both Spanish, so you had that national connection when all of us were in England. And yeah, both of you are coming to visit me in Munich this summer, so I'm really excited about that. And yeah, I think that's actually a great idea. I think we should definitely do one standard one, the two of us, just doing a regular podcast, but in person. And then I think maybe we should do a private podcast, sort of, where it's like the three of us, and we record it. We might not put it out there, but we can just record it and, you know, just reminisce. And I still... this word reminiscing, so it's reminiscing, but I don't know what the infinitive is, or like the standard form. To reminisce?
Reminisce? I think so. No, to reminisce.
To reminisce. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think so.
We can reminisce about our time in England, which would be fun.
Yeah, I love
these English words.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because sometimes we like, I feel like maybe we make them up, but they sound perfect. Perfect, like, to each other. Sorry, Hannah.
I think the first person we should hire for this podcast is not even a producer or like an editor or something. It should just be an English teacher who is joining these calls, right? And who is sort of giving us a sign when we said a wrong word or something that doesn't make any sense. I think that would be a good investment.
Like makeup words, like all the time.
Yeah, probably 15%, 20%. It's just made up.
At least, like, I'm not German or you're not Spanish, because if that was the case, like, I would just, like, make Spanish words into English and the other person would, like, agree with me. Because at least if I make the Spanish word into English, you'd be like, what is that? But if it was another Spanish word, they'd be like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. So, yeah. Oh my God, yesterday I was... This is gonna sound weird. I was practicing like an interview with myself. Like someone asked me how I learned English. This was just funny because I was just talking out loud to myself in English. My mom probably heard, like, what is she doing? But I was explaining my whole like trajectory in like learning English and how my life is mostly in English now and everything. And yeah, that's just, I just got reminding them of that. So, I love how I'm laughing about, like,
your own story.
Like, yeah.
No, it's good. Yeah, I think, I mean, just on that note, I think language is so cool. I'm getting increasingly fascinated by language, right? I mean, it's so cool that we can talk to each other. I mean, it sounds so obvious and kind of dumb nowadays because everybody speaks English, but the fact that we can interact and talk to each other and the fact that we can do so on a pretty high level of accuracy in terms of what we actually mean, right? Which is challenging enough to do in your own language, right? And we both probably still have a pretty big room for improvement on that front. But it's still so cool that we can interact and exchange thoughts and ideas. And I don't know, maybe I've just watched too many sci-fi movies in the past couple of weeks, but I'm starting to get so fascinated by just the abilities of our minds, right? And our brains specifically, right? But also like this whole like consciousness behind it. I don't want to get into everything because it makes me sound like I've been taken by the aliens and been returned with some kind of new insight or something. It makes me look weird, so I'm going to keep it short. But I just find it so amazing that I can say something, you can hear something, pick it up, process it, understand what I meant, and react to it. How amazing is that? It's just mind blowing because it's almost like our minds function like portals. And, you know, both when we're interacting with people, but also when we're interacting with ourselves and just the space that our mind creates, you know, it's so free of any regulation. I mean, there's very few physical laws that apply to the realm of your mind, for example, right? There's no gravity, right? In your mind, you can fly, you can jump up and down, you can, you know, develop things that don't make sense in the real world. You can, I don't know, just do things and there's no limitation. I mean, you might argue that nowadays with, all of the media and different influences that, you know, our minds do get constrained by external factors, right? By, for example, certain mindsets that are being enforced onto us or into us, right? By certain political views or ideological views that are being, you know, planted in our minds from a young age. And you might argue from that perspective that we are constrained in some kind of way in our minds. But in general, it's a pretty, pretty free space if you allow yourself to, you know, be free in your mind. And then it's just magical because you can do whatever the heck you want in there. And that just fascinates me. And also, like, specifically in terms of interacting with other people, how somehow we can, you know, play in... Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I know it makes me sound kind of weird. It makes me sound kind of like I have some kind of mental problem. But
No, it makes you sound like passionate about like weird talk. I don't know. I don't think it's weird. It is completely true what you're saying, and it is amazing that we can do this. This thing, like, we're capable of, like, having our brain that we can do, like, everything is possible in our mind, but also that with that, like, capability of our minds, we, like, generated a way of communicating as a species. Like, it's like if we made up a way to talk to dogs. Like, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds insane, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously not the same thing, because that would mean a two-way path, and dogs can't communicate in the same way we can.
Oh, you're stepping
comprehend.
On some people's toes by saying that.
No,
I'm sure there are people who say, you can interact with dogs, they can hear you, they have feelings too. How dare you, Irene?
I mean, they probably do, but like not definitely not in the same level as we do and the same level of comprehension. That's why it wouldn't be as possible, but it's the same kind of thing. It's creating, like, we weren't born talking or knowing a language or being able to communicate. And now we can. And because we made it up, we decided that we could. Artificially. Sorry, now you've transmitted it here.
Now you're the one who sounds really weird and obsessed and...
Yeah. See, you transmitted your passion to me. Yeah.
Yes. Let's call it passion. That sounds better than craziness.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not craziness. It's passion.
Yeah. But it does make you wonder, specifically given that example that you just mentioned, right? Us not being able to interact with dogs on that same level that you and I interact with, it kind of makes you wonder, might there potentially be, and now I'm the one who will be crazy again, might there potentially be beings of an even higher level of conscious complexity, right? Which look at us and feel the same way we feel about our inability to interact with dogs, right? So us sort of being the dogs and them being the higher being with a higher level of conscious complexity, and being able to think much, not even necessarily clearer, but just being able to think on higher levels, which are just incomprehensible to us. I certainly have watched way too many of these sci-fi movies. But I think these stories and these narratives which explore these ideas of consciousness and potentially, you know, higher forms of consciousness. You know, there's also these different movies. I think there's one called Lucy, which is about, you know, unlocking higher percentages of your brain's capability, right? Where I think it's sort of about we as humans, we only use 10% of the capacity of our minds or something. And the movie explores what life could be like if you were to unlock these remaining percentages, right? So there's like a ton of stories and books and movies exploring this idea of higher forms of consciousness. And I mean, I totally agree. Like in day-to-day life, of course, you just have to like do your thing and you don't have to get crazy about it. But I think sometimes it's worth just, you know, opening up your mind to really just like go crazy and look at things differently and look at the world and think, holy crap, what am I even doing here, right? Like I'm sitting here on this planet in some massive universe. I'm like the tiniest part of that. Why am I studying? Why am I not partying?
Why am I not like lying on the grass, just contemplating?
Yeah, and why don't I just, you know, use my amazing consciousness to just, you know, leave my physical existence and just float around, right? Because who's stopping me to do that?
Do you want to take drugs or not? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it also really reminds, like, the things I just said, I discovered this one author online. I know we're sort of getting off track. We don't have a clear topic anymore, but that's fine. I discovered this author, and it was a podcast conversation between Tim Ferriss and him. I don't know what his name was again. I think it was something like Salmon Kalani or something. That's definitely wrong, but he's the author of some kind of fiction book series, right? And he's very famous as an author. But he's pretty young, and I don't know, the conversation just really, like, I don't know why, and I don't know how I just thought of that, you know, talking about the conscious mind. But something about him just amazed me. Yeah, I'm really missing the part where this connects to anything we just talked about.
It's fine. We're going crazy now. It's fine. Yeah. If you find the podcast, like, if it just comes, like, to your mind, the name of the person, just tell me.
Yeah.
Like, see.
Yeah, I'll send you the link. Yeah.
You know, I started reading Elon Musk's book. Well, it's not his book. It's someone.
The biography.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. And yeah, like, I read like 5 pages. So
oh, nice. Well done.
I'm looking forward to reading it. I'm looking forward to finishing it.
What amazing highlights. Oh, that's an interesting phrase. That's something I want to explore. Why do you look forward to finishing the book and not looking forward to reading it?
Because if I finish it, that means I've read it. And I rarely read whole books. Like, I start a book, I find it really interesting, I read it for a few weeks, and then I stop. And then I don't want to read that book. I stop wanting to read that book. So I read another book, and then the same happens. And I don't finish books, and it's very annoying. It's like with TV shows. I start a TV show, watch it to like the last season, and then I don't finish it until like a year later. But at least I finish them, because I don't finish books. So it's annoying, and it's my own fault. It's just something happens in my brain that's just, I don't know, I don't finish books, and that's never been a problem until like recently, like the past few years. And I mean, I have finished books, but I've kind of had to really force myself to finish it. And I guess that's not the point. You should want to finish the book, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. It's again one of those those things. I mean, just the way you quizzed that that question, I think you should want to finish a book, right? I mean, what does "should" really mean, right?
Yeah.
I mean, again, now we're drifting off again into this. What's the meaning of life? Again, I want to give my disclaimer. I'm a German, so I have a very nihilistic tendency, right? All of the German philosophers are very dark and pessimistic about life, so it's in my nature. I don't know what defense, or if you have any defense, right? But this is mine. Yeah, but so, I don't know. Do I have anything to comment on that?
I mean,
I think the problem, I think that's the easier part. I think the problem, and I'm not judging you for it because I have the same problem, is just the fact that nowadays we're very short term. It's very difficult to concentrate on something long term. And I don't just mean in the moment, right? I mean, it's difficult enough to sit down and read for like an hour. That seems like a big task for many, right? But also to keep being interested in the same idea for more than like 2 weeks or something, right? I mean, that's like on a broader level, that's also about, you know, our inability to think long term. This gives me an opportunity to connect what we're talking about to this author that I heard about, because he essentially said before he starts writing any book, he needs to have thought about the idea for the book for at least 3 years, because that's what gives him confidence that he will be able to follow through with that book, and that it's long-lasting enough and timeless enough that he will be able to persist throughout the approximately 2 to 3 years it'll take to actually write and publish that book, right? And I was just like, oh my God, thinking about an idea for 3 years, not doing anything about it, and then, you know, taking that step and making that decision to start something which will take another 3 years to develop. I mean, it sounds crazy nowadays, right? That time scale or timeline perspective. Yeah. And I think just to bring it back to your actual thing, it's just with a book. I mean, a book seems like a big thing nowadays. But if you think about it, reading a book, even if you're just an average reader in terms of your reading speed, it'll probably take, I don't know, 4 to 5 hours to finish a regular size book with like 200, 300 pages, right? So it's actually not that long. Like most TV shows that both of us watch, like a season of that or like a season of that will take longer than that. But we'll finish a season of a TV show pretty quickly, like sometimes in a day, right? But with a book, for some reason, it feels like a multiple weeks project. Yeah. So that's no answer to your question, whether or not we should want to finish books. And it's no solution on how you could finish books, even if you wanted to. But it's just an explanation of the circumstances that might lead to this situation of yours. Yeah. I have diplomatically avoided answering the question.
No, but that's like a totally fine answer. It is true. I don't know. I'll just have to build my focus and like, yeah. I don't know.
Just do better, Irene.
I'll just read. Like, I'll just try. It's not a big deal. Yeah. And like, I do want to read the books I start, so I should not read several books at the time, I think, because I do tend to do that. Well, this was a good episode, I think. A very diverse, multi-topical, that's not a word.
It was a colorful episode, let's just call it that.
Yeah. It was blue, but it was also green, so that's good.
Okay. No, now it's getting weird again.
Yeah, it was also yellow, that's true. So for me, I think it was like sad, green is like yay, and then yellow is like weird.
Oh, okay, interesting. It's good that you explained that, because otherwise I was just confused where the blue suddenly came from.
Yeah, blue is sad.
Okay, interesting. For me, blue is hope. Material for a new podcast episode.
Yeah.
I think,
yeah,
honestly,
we stop now.
Yeah, we should stop now. I think, okay, let me continue and then we stop. It's just, you know, the fact that you're wearing such a colorful t-shirt today. I think next time stick with like something more subtle, like a black t-shirt, like I am.
Oh, so you're saying
one.
It's my fault. It's because of what I'm wearing.
Yeah, of course it's your fault. I mean,
that's very sexist.
Okay, we should stop now. Yeah, I'm glad we're having such fun.
I need to study. So yeah.
Yeah. We'll be productive now. We'll do our role and do our job in this world, and we'll be back next weekend with yet another wonderfully colorful episode. Yes.
Hopefully. Yes.
Hopefully. Okay. Bye-bye. I see you next week. Take care.
Bye. Take care.